Hi, I'm Rob Grizz and I'm the producer of Australian Rock of Ages, and it's a pleasure to bring you another program in this series of 24 monthly programs that will feature the life and time stories of some of the people whose talent, skills and dedication have contributed to the development of Australian music, particularly through the 1960s and 1970s. In this program, we feature the story of Claire Humphreys. So how did you and Jerry survive then in London?
Oh, just.
Just.
Because, you know, the priority was for Jerry. I never had the addiction of that he had.
Yeah.
We all have our demons. We all have
addictions. Oh, absolutely. Yep.
But he was constant. You know, he had to have, always had to have dope, always had to have plenty of grog, always had to. So, you know, that's where the money used to go. I mean, he wasn't a gambler, but he was a drinker and he liked to smoke his dope.
Yeah.
So we were never going to get anywhere, you know what I mean? I could feel that coming, you know, then. And, you know, he started getting out of, you know, he wasn't the person he'd become a different person. The alcohol was strong that he was drinking. It wasn't the beers that he used to like. And, you know, he started getting a bit punchy. And, of course, I thought, God, my life, you know, I'm going to lose my life here. And I still loved him, but I had to pull away from him then. My grandmother had died, and I got half the money. Mum got half, I got the other half. And so my mother was still alive then, so she said to me, she rang me up and said, your grandmother would want you to buy a house. So then when I got the will, I actually got instructions that I was to buy a house in my name because they didn't trust
the situation.
So so I had a house to live in. Jerry lived there for the first month. And
so, sorry, did you come back to Australia?
No, I was in London.
You bought him in London?
In London,
okay.
And no, we didn't come back to Australia. I'd left Australia behind.
No, I thought so.
By now I'd had just, that was all bad memories. Do you know
what
I mean?
Yes,
like, I wanted
yes.
a new start. I was
yes.
happy in London.
Yes.
I worked at the Australian Embassy. I got a job dispatching the diplomatic mail, working for the Navy. I had great fun with the officers. They were terrific. Like, we'd do things like, the office girls, we'd do things like make them salad for the lunch with the Army or their lunch with the Air Force or something, you know, get all the food together for them. And they'd let us ring home, you know, on their phones for nothing. I mean, they were great guys, really great guys. We had such fun with them.
Your face was up then when you were talking about that. Which suggests to me, not only did you enjoy that moment, but you're reflecting on it and it still brings you joy.
Oh,
is this also partly because you are re-establishing your person again?
Yes, my own personality, and I was free then. It was hard because I had to do more jobs than one to grow Rebecca, because she was only 14 when her dad left. And not that his contribution was extra much, but, you know, all of a sudden I was by myself doing all of it and I had a mortgage now. So
that must have been a very difficult decision to make, though. Even though you can see consequences,
the
bond was strong.
The hardest decision I've ever had to make in my life. I knew that if I stayed with him, he'd probably kill me. And he was not a violent man.
No.
He was not a violent man. But the alcohol...
The demons
were in him.
Yeah.
And he was frustrated. He couldn't get the money he wanted. You know, it was just awful.
It's also, I suspect, having not had to experience it, but having witnessed it, that when you experience a certain amount of success, it doesn't matter whether you're a painter or a musician or what, it's very hard not to keep wanting it. And if you can't get it, it must be destroying.
It must be, but he never ever mentioned that. I was always really in admiration of him for that, because I thought, you know, you really are very manly in this. Like, another
sure.
man wouldn't have done what you did.
Sure.
But, you know, at the same time, I mustn't take all the blame for that, because, you know, he was being pursued very heavily by the drug squad.
Yes. And in those days, they were
so heavy. I mean, they probably still are very heavy, but they've got more reason to be heavy now than they were for that situation.
Right. Absolutely right.
And he was terrified. And I remember us going to a dinner party there in London. We made friends very easily, both of us. And different friends, because he liked druggy friends more than me. But You know, I remember this bloke saying, "What are those spots on your chin, man? What's all that? What's wrong with your beard?" And he said, "Oh, I had a fright." I had a fright, and I started. He said, "You wouldn't want to have too many more frights, mate. You'll be bald as a badger." Anyway, so that was that. But so then I found a job in a wine bar, which was great because the tips were great, and I was able to because of that. I only had to work from 10 till 3, and the tips were fabulous. It was with all the money brokers and the stock brokers in the City of London. So really upmarket, Whittington's Wine Bar it was. So I used to go home with the same money a week as my a friend of mine who was a teacher. And she had to really gruel for her money, and I had fun. Like, you know, I did that for 5 years. So I was able to send Rebecca on, holidays to Iona with her school friends, and all the great things, the school trips they had to Europe, and all the great things that I could afford for her to do that she probably couldn't have afforded to have if the situation had been the same as it was prior. And I was able to start going to Greece on, our lives changed in a way. I mean, I'm sort of fairly good with money, like as far as I'm good if I've got none. I manage. Do you know what I mean? I can manage on very little, really, because that's okay with me. It's not the end of the world for me, because I've still travelled the world, and I've done it like my priority's been travelling, so I haven't worried about expensive this or expensive that, or, you know, I mean, I get by quite nicely.
So how long did you stay in England for?
I came back in 91 because Rebecca, my daughter, she was our daughter. She was here. She'd come back. She was going backwards and forwards to England. I used to have, you know, when I, you know, sold a house, I'd get a bit of, I had 3 houses I had in England. And I moved the, I had to leave London because I'd got a place for a degree course down in Cornwall. I'd done my foundation art course in London, College of Printing. And I was, you know, a frustrated artist, really, because I hadn't finished my diploma. And so I got a degree course down in Falmouth, and I had to... I rented it out, but I had to sell the house because I had 2 dogs and I took them down to Cornwall with me. Rebecca had got a place in Brighton doing her degree. She did her foundation in Chelsea, then she went to do her degree in Brighton. And I saw that as my opportunity to go back to art school myself because my responsibility as such were relinquished. And she'd gotten a grant for her degree course. So I pursued the same path to honour my personal obligation.
It was sort of like unfinished business for you, wasn't it?
So I got a grant as well, and I did sculpture at Falmouth. So I had to, in order to find a house for me and the two dogs, I had to sell the London house and buy one in Cornwall. So I bought one in Cornwall, and then we were unky-dory. So then and Rebecca was fine. She'd re-established herself in Brighton, so she was living there, and that's where her friends were. And I was in Cornwall, and she used to come down to Cornwall a lot because we had great fun. I was doing a fine art degree in Cornwall, and she was the same age as the students that I was doing the degree with. So we had great fun going up and down to all the parties in Cornwall. And then, of course, I came back here in 91 because Rebecca was she'd hurt her back. She was only 28 then, and she'd hurt her back badly. And I'd just bought a house in Manchester, actually, because I'd gone up there. I was having a relationship, and I moved up there after I finished the degree in Cornwall. The heart always leads the path. And there I was in Manchester, and I thought, oh, I don't like it here. And record hurt her back. So, again, all things collide. I mean, with my lover at the time, we'd gone over to Spain to stay in his parents' villa over there, and the dog had just died. One of my dogs had just died, and the sun was coming through the window when I was changing planes at Madrid Airport, and I said, "I'm going home." And he said, "Don't be ridiculous. You've just bought a house." I said, "I'm going home," because all of a sudden there was snow in Manchester. The sun was coming through the plate glass windows in Madrid, and I thought, "No, I'm going home. I want some sun." And Rebecca was here, and she'd hurt her back. So that all happened at once. So, of course, I quarantined the dog, the remaining dog, and came back to Melbourne.
Come stay with me, my fine lady.
I was visiting the dog in the quarantine over at Spotswood on a weekly basis. You know, I'd sit there with the dog for 3 hours and sit on a pink deck chair, and she'd sit on another pink deck chair, and we'd just chat. And there were zoo animals in there, but we weren't allowed to, you know, the dogs weren't allowed to.
Oh, of course.
She was in there for 2 months, and then I eventually rented a little place around in South Melbourne that was owned by Peter Couchman, and he didn't mind me having a dog, so there was me and Maisie, and I started my new life. And because I'd already worked a bit in Manchester doing hospital arts, painting ceilings in hospitals for patients so they'd have something to look at, I went to Arts Access here in Melbourne, and they got me a job out at Murrundle running the art program out there. So I did that until it closed down in 95, and that was the best job I've ever had, because I after the life I'd lived and the pop scene and all the rest of the experience I'd had, mad's easy. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was out there with all these raving nutters. They were bloody marvellous. I loved them. They come down in there. Come down in their dressing gowns and pajamas, and they do their printing or their paintings or whatever. And my degree was in sculpture, so I was able to help them make things, and it was fantastic. So I had a ball, and then of course it was closed down in 95. So then I got a job out at Thomas Emling Hospital, which was for the criminally insane, mad murderers, mad rapists. And I was a tape art teacher there for 8 years. I also
Must have been an experience too.
That was an experience, but I had to do the curriculum.
Oh yeah, bye.
Like they were, yes. They had mental illness, but I had an adjusted curriculum that they had to achieve. So they had to have a certificate by the time they left. So it was different. It was much more structured.
Yes.
Than the program out at Murrundle. Murrundle was the real fun program.
I was going to say, it wouldn't have been as much fun for you, because you're more spontaneous yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, quite, and much more, you know, naturally creative. And so it was lovely. Yeah, I took so many photographs at Murrundle. It goes beyond heard of now.
Oh, definitely.
I have got the best photographs of the best people. Of course, most of them have died, because when the hospitals closed, of course, they all hit the streets unprescribed drugs and dying of overdoses and walking in front of trains. They weren't equipped for the streets.
Yeah.
They had that marvellous grounds to walk around in. They could stay 6 hours, 6 days, 6 years. You know, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Carte blanche treatment. But, of course, that all went, so that was really heartbreaking. So after that, you know, and then I did a lot of community murals, Kilda mural, South Melbourne mural, like, you know, health centres. I did a big project with the cancer patients oncology at Royal Melbourne, Trees of Life. I had an enormous career for 15 years in community arts. So, you know, I had a rich, rich, rich experience with all of that. I really, you know, it's great now, because I not so long ago I had I facilitated an art program down at Sacred Heart. I volunteer Sacred Heart. I volunteer in one of the op shops, but I actually facilitated an art program, you know, a paid job. And, of course, they were for the street ladies. So a lot of people that I met, Thomas Emling Hospital, Murrundle, end up in all sorts of places like St Kilda. And I've bumped into them all the way along the line. Do you know what I mean? Taught for a while at Juvenile Justice, but that was the roughest job. Juvenile justice was the roughest job I've ever had. I would never recommend anybody working at juvenile justice. You know, I remember the guards sitting there looking at skin magazines with their feet up for the two-hour art class, and everyone was going berserk, and I had to control it. They didn't do a thing to lift a finger.
You're still exhibiting today, aren't you?
Yes. I've currently got an exhibition at the City Library. I like exhibiting. Of course, my work's become smaller over the years, because, you know, I have, you know, various arthritis in the wrists, etc. You know, all that
which happens to all of us now.
Which happens to all
as
of
we
us,
age,
you know,
bit stuff falling off.
When drummers get what do they call it?
The RSI.
They get all that. So, me too. So my scope is smaller, but I've got an exhibition at the City Library at the moment, and I like having exhibitions in public places, because you get the point of view from everybody, because I go in there sometimes and I just listen to people's comments, and I love it, because that's the only way you get the truth. You see, if you go, you go to art galleries, you know, you get all sorts of people bullshitting you, you know, and telling you all these things that are, you know, aren't necessarily true or whatever. But it's quite nice at the library because then so many more people get to see it. You know, it's open day and night. It's open 7 days a week. I mean, it's just fabulous. So I like being, I like having the work in there. I've got designs, fabric collages. I've got cards that were made from that. And I'm now also making dolls that have got various famous paintings, faces. So this one's...
Oh, the one you're showing me, yes.
This one's The Birth of Venus, and I've got Mona Lisa. I've got Van Gogh and Toulouse-Lautrec in the most fabulous brocade dresses. And they're called the Miracle Marys because they've all got a Miracle Mary medal on them.
Now, you're a genuine baby boomer, and it has been said that the baby boomer generation is possibly the most fortunate of all generations because it's never really had a world war, it hasn't gone through a depression, and yet it's gone through some amazing social changes. Are you happy with the life you've lived, or would you rather lived in a different era?
Oh no, I've loved the life I've lived. I've had a fabulous life, and I think it's because I've travelled a lot, which is fabulous for anybody to do, because you really see how other people live, and it really helps build you the openings of your mind. But I appreciate the simple things, and to be honest with you, I get a great deal of pleasure out of small things. So I think that's why I've had such a wonderful life, because no matter what time I lived in, I would really appreciate, you know, the small things that I consider to be beautiful, you know, interactions with people.
Well, Claire, our time is at an end. Can I just say to you, thank you very much for sharing what really is a snapshot of your life. We can't get your story in such a short time, but it's been an amazing journey you've been on, and I and the listeners appreciate you sharing it with us.
Thank you so much. It's my great pleasure.
Sadly, Jerry passed away in December of 2005. I'd like to finish the story of Claire by playing a track recorded by the loved ones 50 years ago in 1966. That track, Sad Dark Eyes, was written and sung by Jerry and was in fact inspired by Claire.
I look at you and your sad dark eyes and your gypsy face with your Spanish face. Your words like rounds and your voice like doves. Baby, I want to kiss your burning mouth, your sad dark eyes, your ghost like soul. Darling, you'll be
is a Handsome Doc production and is podcast through the Toorak Times and TAG.